Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms, gardens, and natural spaces of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. And with me in the studio on this snowy February morning is Scott Thompson of Blackberry Bog Farm in Svensson. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Good morning.
It's so great to have you here.
Thank you.
It's nice and cozy where we are. It's definitely a little bit chilly outside. But there's a lot going on your farm. There's a lot going on in people's gardens right now, kind of sometimes out of sight, under the ground. But I want to talk a little bit with you about what you're doing on your farm. Maybe introduce us to who you are and what you produce and where you sell, and then delve deeper into some topics that are kind of relevant for this time of year.
Very good. Be happy to. So Blackberry Bog Farm has, we're just entering our fourth season.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So exciting.
We purchased the farm in Svensson on Old Highway 30 in January of 2015. And they've been abandoned for 15 years.
Yeah.
It's a 30-acre farm. 1884 homestead is the best that we can come up with for dates. So prior to Old Highway 30, New Highway 30, any 30s there at all, when it was boats that people got around on. And the story goes that the farmstead house was built right after they built the sauna, or sauna, I'm sorry.
really, get it right.
Yeah, I get it right. I've been corrected many times. That they floated the materials up Svensson Slough and then up Bear Creek, and we were on Bear Creek, and that's how they brought the building materials and those things that they didn't create on site.
Wow.
And built this house. And so we started our first year there, my wife and my younger son, who's full-time on the farm with us. And our first year we did primarily cut flowers.
Uh-huh.
We weren't sure what would grow where,
trying
to bring back this farm that had been abandoned for 15 years. You can never really tell.
And you had a lot of blackberries on that farm.
Oh, we had a lot of blackberries. We had blackberries going 30 feet up into the trees. So
why
the blackberries.
Yeah.
And about half of it is wetlands. So hence the bog of Blackberry Bog Farm. And so we, and elk as well. The elk had kind of taken over some of the areas around there. There's a herd of about 35 elk that like that area very much. So we put up some fencing, put in cut flowers that first year, sold a few plant starts. The second year we moved into nursery and also started raising pastured chickens, which we sell in the area, also a few vegetables.
Yeah.
And then in our third season of 2017, really expanded the vegetables, expanded the chickens, kept the cut flowers. And then we're also planting an orchard, which we were planning an orchard. And now this spring we will be planting the orchard.
A lot of planning that goes into planting.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, with a 2-acre orchard and a 1-acre vegetable field, we needed to exclude the elk from that area as well, or there would be no orchard, nor would there be a vegetable field.
Elk can do a lot of very quick damage.
Very quickly. You know, I see them come into our pastures, and they'll come in where the grass is a foot high, and they leave an hour later, and there's no grass, and the grass is gone. I mean, it's amazing what a herd of it's a herd of cows.
Yeah, basically.
Basically coming through your pasture or your orchard, and yes, it can do a lot of damage. So, a lot of planting. So we start planting for spring season in September.
Yeah.
With our primroses, pansies, and violas.
Yeah.
We start planting in September and October.
Yeah.
Very soon after that, some of our perennial flowers that will overwinter, we start planting at that time. We're now getting up to where we have actually started to transplant some of our warm season flowers, our petunias, and some of those sorts of things, lobelias, things that we make hanging baskets with. We're starting to pot those up into the hanging baskets. We start almost everything from seed on the farm. And so that's the kind of things that's going on for us now.
Yeah.
Tomato plants have been started. Pepper plants have been started. All those sorts of things have been started. In the fields, it is kind of a quiet time working outside because it's so wet and cold right now.
Yeah, and things are really dormant this time of year. I mean, what's interesting is that there's a lot going on, but it just feels very quiet and like most things are asleep. Unless you have a high tunnel or a greenhouse where you're doing like winter greens or winter vegetables, outside, everything's kind of dormant. Maybe you have your beds in cover crop, or they're mulched, or they're covered in some way, or maybe you just let the weeds go. It all kind of depends on.
Well, that's cover crop, isn't
it? Yeah. You know, there's many a year when I've just basically written off a bed as going, you know, those weeds, that's kind of a cover crop. That looks good. Yeah. We'll just call it done.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, actually, you know, it's been a fairly warm winter.
Overall, yeah, it really has.
And we do have some pears that we're getting ready to plant out into the orchard, and they've broken bud already.
Oh, wow, really?
They've broken bud.
So I mean, that's something that I definitely want to talk to you about, because one of your specialties, and I think something that's really kind of unique about you and your skill set, is that you do have a lot of experience with fruit trees, growing trees, grafting trees, pruning trees. And I know you've taught grafting classes
sure,
before.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's something that I think a lot of people, fruit trees are so beautiful and they enhance a garden. They're wonderful. It's exciting when you get the fruit off of them. But not many people really understand what kind of things you need to do to take care of them. So talk a little bit about that. I mean, it's something that concerns a lot of people. It's like you see the flowers, the buds starting to break, but then you get a freeze. What does that mean? What should
sure,
I do?
Sure. So we do almost all of our own grafting on the farm.
Uh-huh.
So we have grafted hundreds of plums, Asian pears, apple trees.
Mm-hmm.
We start our grapes from starts, from sticks. We do
uh-huh.
a lot of our own starts of perennial flowers and the like. And so mm-hmm. that is something that that we try to do a lot of. And over the years, we have done hundreds and hundreds of fruit trees. That grafting allows us to get varieties that are very well suited to our local environment.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do disease-resistant apple trees, for example,
yeah.
that are nearly immune to apple scab.
Yeah.
So some of the trees that some of the varieties of apples, for example, that you might get at the grocery store here in our wet environment, you're going to have huge problems with apple scab, which is a fungal disease.
Yeah.
Well, we get varieties that
yeah.
will not have that issue.
Yeah.
They're still susceptible to insect damage, but not to fungal disease. That's one of the reasons that we do that is
yeah.
to tailor to this area.
Because we are susceptible to a lot of diseases. Is it because it's cooler and wetter?
Cooler and wetter, yeah,
here.
Exactly.
So we just don't get the heat that a lot of those – I mean, think about a lot of fruit trees like that, like Hood River area – where it gets very hot in the summer is where like the lot of fruit comes from in Oregon.
Well, there's several issues that make it difficult to do some of these things in this area.
Yeah.
So the first is yes, it's wet and damp, and quite often wet and damp late into the season.
Uh-huh.
So we grow a few hops.
Yeah.
Maybe 80 or 100 hop binds.
Yeah.
So the bee bind.
Uh huh.
They can be a real challenge when they're first breaking bud in the spring. There's so many different fungal diseases they can be susceptible to.
Uh-huh.
So if you have a cold, wet spring like we did last year,
yeah.
It's really hard to grow hops.
Yeah.
So that's one of the issues. The second issue is we just don't have that much heat.
Yeah.
As far as heat units go,
mm-hmm.
heating degree days. So different varieties of plants need a certain amount of heat in order to ripen properly.
Yeah.
So there are, just to use apples as an example, because so many people are familiar with apples, there's an apple that many people know as Gala.
Uh-huh.
Gala typically gets picked in Wenatchee, Yakima, some of the prime apple-growing areas of the Northwest, in late August into early September. Well, if we grow it here, it might be a little bit later because
yeah.
we just don't have as much heat. We don't have as much heat compared to the Willamette Valley.
Yeah.
So if you are going to plant blueberries, for example, and you go into one of the Oregon State University publications on blueberry varieties for the Pacific Northwest, it will say it ripens at this period of time. Well, that's based on the Willamette Valley.
Yeah.
Add 2 to 3 weeks if you're on the coast of Oregon. Farther inland you move, the closer that we will be to the Willamette Valley. But you can't take what you get from
yeah.
the Willamette Valley trials.
And those 2 to 3 weeks can make a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Because that might mean that it's starting to rain.
It might mean that apple, Granny Smith, for example,
mm-hmm.
will never ripen. I have people that come to our farmer's market booth and they say, "Yo, do you have any Granny Smith apples, apple trees?"
Yeah.
No. I don't plant them, so I'm not going to sell them to you because
yeah.
it will never get ripe in Clatsop
yeah.
County. We don't have the heat. We don't have the heat for a Braeburn, most likely.
Yeah.
And the same applies to tomatoes. We do
yeah.
tomato varieties. I only do short-season tomatoes.
I
love Mortgage Lifter.
I know.
Oh, it's a great tomato. But unless you're going to grow it under plastic,
yeah.
you're not going to ripen that tomato here.
Yeah, and that's what's so hard for a lot of people, and especially people who've moved here from somewhere else. And I feel like I've been having that conversation for years now with tomato fans out here. And when we first started selling tomato plants, you know, I definitely incorporated a few heirlooms that people kept asking for.
Sure.
I think Cherokee Purple and...
Well, Cherokee Purple is not a particularly long-season plant, though.
But it depends
not
on your garden. It really depends on where you are. And that I learned to ask people those questions. You know, are you gardening in Gearhart right next to the ocean?
Yes.
Are you in Cannon Beach? Are you out in Napa or Brownsmead? I mean, those are very different things. And what you can grow there is going to be very different.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, erring on the side of having short season, maybe smaller tomatoes that are more likely to ripen. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems to be true for a lot of things. We always look for short season.
Yeah.
Because you want to have the best chance of having something ripen out here. And it may not be the name variety that you're
accustomed to.
But
there's a lot of varieties that have been developed for short seasons.
Absolutely.
That are marvelous varieties. And,
yeah.
And you can dig into catalogs. You can ask growers like you and I, because we're
experimenting with that. Yeah.
With very few exceptions, I've eaten everything I grow.
Yeah.
And the things that we sell, you know, we grow for ourselves as well. So we're pretty familiar with different varieties.
You actually asked
about pruning. Do you want to come back to pruning or do you want to keep going down this
path? Well, I'm a little bit both. I am curious, like, what would be some apple varieties that you would say do well in our area? I mean, like, if you can't grow Granny Smith, you can't grow Braeburn, what can you grow here?
The varieties that we have gone with are a group of apples that have come out of some of the universities.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group called PRI, which stands for Purdue Rutgers University of Illinois, and they have come up with a series of apples that are they're very good apples, and they're scab nearly they say scab immune. I've had people within Oregon State University say there's no such thing, but Purdue apparently disagrees. And they have a website that describes these apples very nicely. But these apples will ripen from the beginning of August all the way to later than we will ripen. Nearly scab immune. They have wonderful descriptions of these apples. Are they a sweet apple? Are they tart? Are they better for eating out of hand? Are they better for cooking? I've probably done a dozen of those apples. Liberty Apple, many people are familiar with.
Yeah, I always hear
that.
That
came out of Cornell University. Yeah. That's a McIntosh, McCoon descendant. There's an experiment station in Nova Scotia that's done a lot of work with this as well. So they have Nova Easy Grow and Nova Mac and a whole series of Nova this and Nova
apples
that
they've developed.
Apples that they've developed. The Czech Republic has come up with several varieties.
Really?
That they've released internationally. And so we're growing a couple of those. I have not tasted those yet. We're still growing those.
Yeah. Well, and that's a long-term commitment.
It is a long-term process, yes. You don't grow
before
it in the spring
you taste fruit,
and have it that summer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's years off. But most of the ones that have come out of the PRI series, I've tasted those over the years.
Yeah.
And so there's one that the average consumer could not distinguish from a Golden Delicious, but it doesn't get apple scab. There's one that's a Gala cross, so it's very Gala-like. It's a yielding flesh. It's very sweet but juicy, ripens early. Wonderful apple.
But it doesn't get scab.
But it doesn't get apple scab.
Yeah,
exactly.
So things like apple scab or some of the insects that damage apple trees, what are some of the care that people need to do? Because you hear about taking care of your fruit
trees. Pruning.
Well, pruning is one of them. Absolutely.
Segue,
thank
Teresa,
you.
That's marvelous.
I'm not sure where that came from. Thanks. But thinking about that, because again, like you, so you move into a house, there's a fruit tree.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what to do with that.
Yes.
How do I take care of it? And you hear a lot about people like dormant spray, taking care of pruning in the winter. What do you do?
Yeah. So almost any perennial fruit, be it blueberry bush, blackberries, raspberries, any of your apples, pears, peaches, they all benefit from pruning. If you don't prune on a regular basis, you're going to maybe get no fruit, but certainly the fruit will be of an inferior quality. Keeping, especially along where we live, keeping space between the branches, keeping good air circulation within the canopy of the tree, within the blueberry bush, is critical to cutting down on fungal infestations, fungal diseases.
Because like damp. Damp, poor air circulation, all bad.
I mean, to not go too far down this path, but think of where we get fungal diseases, athlete's foot and other things. Well, it's where it's warm and damp.
Yeah.
And so if you go barefoot, you probably wouldn't get athlete's foot as much. Well, we want to have we want to make that environment not conducive to fungal growth on our trees. So we want it to be open. We want to make sure that the canopy is open. There's good air circulation. The sunlight can get in to help ripen the fruit, can raise the temperature within the canopy of that tree. So there's so many different ways that fruit trees can be pruned.
Mm-hmm.
Master Gardeners are a good source of information about how to prune. If you watch, you can sometimes find pruning clinics, but pruning is important.
Yeah.
Winter pruning is most commonly done, especially in apple trees. Winter pruning will tend to invigorate the growth of the tree.
Okay.
If you really want to stop the growth or slow the growth of a tree, you would prune in the summertime. But winter, you can actually see what you're doing a little bit better. The leaves are out of the way, and there's not as much to do in the wintertime. So it's a wonderful time of year to prune.
To do that
pruning.
Because
like you said, you know, right now, everything's dormant. It's a great time to be out in the field and doing mm-hmm. something like that. But pruning, you know, pruning in the wintertime, keeping the canopy opening. One of the earliest pruning classes that I ever had was taught by an extension agent in the Puget Sound region. And he said, you want to look for the dead, the diseased, and the dumb. So the first is, you know, the 3Ds. So if there's a dead branch, take that out. Well, if you come on to, you know, you buy a place and this apple tree is 30 feet tall or 15 feet tall, hasn't been pruned in years and years, the very first thing to do is go out and look at it and get rid of those dead branches.
Yeah.
Then anything that's diseased. Now, with disease, you have to be careful with this. If you're pruning on the same, you know, if a tree has a bacterial disease or some kind of fungal disease, you want to make sure you don't transfer that to another plant in your orchard or in your vineyard or whatever. So most recommendations are that you're going to, you need to sanitize your equipment between trees.
Between trees.
And you can do that. Usually it's done with a bleach solution.
Okay.
Which is horrible for your pruning equipment. It corrodes them.
Yeah.
It's kind of you have to
do that, yeah.
Yeah, you have to do that. So you want to get rid of all those dead branches, anything that is diseased, and then you're gonna clean your pruners between cuts or between trees. And then the dumb. Is there a branch that starts on the outside of the tree and passes through the center of the tree and is rubbing up against another branch?
It's just going in the wrong direction.
It's just going in the wrong direction. It's just dumb. Get rid of that one. If you have an old tree, there's very good extension publications on how to prune a neglected fruit tree, because you don't want to do too much. If you prune too much out at once, you're going to get a huge regrowth, a lot of vegetation, not much fruit. So it's usually a three-year process. You'll take about a third of what you want to get rid of out each year for 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's a long-term process to get to that.
So in extension publications, you can get at the extension office. I mean,
yes.
if you like Clatsop County, Tillamook County, wherever you're listening, you could go to the extension office and ask for that publication. If they don't have it, they could order it for
you. Well, and everything's available online now.
That's true. Actually, go to their websites.
Go and look for publications. You'd search for Oregon State, and don't do OSU because that always takes you to Ohio.
Ohio State University. Yeah. I know. They're very
Oregon
dominant.
Oregon State extension publications, and then there'll be dozens, if scores, hundreds of different publications.
So cool. Hey, so as we pause here, I just want to remind all of our listeners that you are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. We're streaming at coastradio.org. And if you are just joining us this morning, I am talking with Scott Thompson of Blackberry Bog Farm in Svensson. He grows many things at his farm: flowers, vegetables, plant starts, fruit trees,
chickens
and turkeys. A lot of chickens and turkeys. So where can people find your stuff if they are interested in what you sell? Where are you selling these days?
These days, we don't sell.
Well, right now.
But actually, right now, we do have an outlet, and it's Two Old Goats Farm and Feed in Napa.
Okay.
It used to be Granny Patty's. So some people are still more familiar with that.
Uh-huh.
And so we're starting to sell some of our plant starts at Two Old Goats Farm and Feed. And right now, we have just a few herbs, but mostly it's the primroses and the pansies and violas.
Mm-hmm.
Very shortly, the Wickiup Grange, which is the Grange in Svensson,
mm-hmm.
starting the 1st of April, every Sunday afternoon, there's a farm stand there, and local farmers. And by local, the Grange means very local.
Yeah.
And that's between the Astoria city limit and the Columbia County line. But any agricultural product can come and for a $5 fee can set up in the parking lot of the Grange
at noon
on Sunday and sell agricultural products, which we have had live pigs, loads of hay.
Oh, my God.
Turkeys, chickens, plant starts, raspberries, fleeces. As long as it's
any agricultural product. That
and
is
value
so cool.
added is okay as long as you grew the original agricultural product
and processed it and you're selling it.
So if you are a knitter,
Yeah.
And you make yarn from your sheep.
Yeah.
Or alpaca or whatever, your Angora yeah. rabbit. You may sell the yarn.
Yeah.
But you, no fair buying the fleece from the valley and then making the yarn and yeah. selling the yarn. But if you grew the agriculture product
to begin with. Such a great way to promote local agriculture.
And we're moving into our third season with that.
That's so cool. Are you seeing more people showing up for it?
Absolutely.
I mean, on both sides, more sellers and more shoppers?
And you've done farmers markets for yeah. years. So you know what, when people start coming with their reusable bag.
Yeah.
That. It's
you've
they're,
made
they're
it.
Planning for us. Yes, yes. So you know they're coming with a purpose. They're. It's not. Oh, I just happened to stop by. You know, I was driving by. It's like
yeah.
no, it's Sunday. We need to go, and they're regulars.
Well, and people start to anticipate it too, and that's what's so
Absolutely.
Great is
yeah.
that people are looking forward to it. They're looking out for it, and it also allows local producers on whatever scale you're at to think about like, oh, hey, there's an outlet here for me to sell.
Yes, yes.
So for people who maybe have a big home garden, or maybe they have a few sheep, or they raise some chickens, or whatever that is, you have a way to kind of try out selling on a very small scale.
And we have people who set up a tent with a booth. We have people mm-hmm. that sell off the tailgate of their truck.
Yeah.
Off card table.
That's so cool.
Any of those things are fine. So
and that starts the 1st of April.
1st of April from noon until 4. At the Svensson, at the Wickiup Grange,
which is Svensson, yeah.
And if you turn right on Svensson Market Road,
it's right there.
It's right there. Can't miss it. And then at the same Grange, on November 3rd, we're going to have the inaugural Fill Your Pantry event.
I am so excited you're organizing this out here.
We modeled after the Rockford Grange in Hood River, where we're going to invite farmers from the area to bring storage crops.
Uh-huh.
So it'll be the winter squashes, the onions, the potatoes. But value added for that is also okay.
Yeah.
And if anybody still has fresh produce, we decided that would be all right as
well. So this will be November. So mark your calendars.
November 3rd.
That's good. November 3rd, 2018. It's a ways away, but it's going to be super exciting.
Farmers need to be planning now.
Absolutely.
So that's why we're trying to get the word out now. You know, plant some extras, bring your extra potatoes, bring your onion, bring your garlic.
So cool.
So then we also sell, starting in June, we sell at the Klatskanai Farmers Market.
Uh-huh.
And that's every Saturday from 10 until 2. And then that is beginning in June. And then in the middle of June, we start at the Seaside Farmers Market, which is Wednesdays from 3 until 7.
Yeah.
So those are really, you know, those are the places that we sell.
And if people want to taste your chicken, there's a big outlet at the...
Oh, yeah. So we sell our chickens to Fort George, to the brewery. And we are their chicken supplier for the summer. And starting this year, we'll also be their chicken supplier year-round.
So exciting.
So if you get the chicken sandwich, if you get the chicken wing appetizer, if you get the pizza with the chicken on it, it'll be Blackberry Bog Farm chicken.
I'm so excited. That you built that relationship.
We also sell to the co-op.
Yeah.
We also sell the co-op.
I know. You had a lot of turkeys there this Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we'll be doing turkeys again this year. Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful to see all the different outlets that you're fitting into and providing like great local food for this community, for this larger community. I mean, that's a lot of different places that you're selling at. It's very cool.
It is. There's a lot of moving parts.
Yes,
but,
it is.
We've had a lot of support from a lot of different organizations, you know, Fort George, for example. I mean, they kind of took a chance. We had not raised chickens before, and they really helped us get started.
Yeah.
And that's been a very good relationship. You know, different agencies within the community have helped us with different projects. Everybody's been so supportive.
I know.
And it's such a nice thing.
I feel like it's one of the things in running a small farm. I mean, you realize how important your community is. And that in some ways it's like, I mean, you as the farmer, I mean, absolutely, you have to have a lot of drive and ambition and getting out there and doing it. But your community is really what makes it happen.
Oh, absolutely. And so many people will say to me, oh, we're so happy that you're, for example, at the Svensson Grange on Sunday afternoons.
Yeah.
To which I will reply, you know, I haven't happened to see you there buying things, though.
Yeah.
And if people don't come and buy, we're not going to be able to be there for the long term. So it's very nice for you to give me your well wishes.
Yeah. You got to show up.
It's kind of nice for you to show up and buy a few things, too. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it very much encouraged people who like to see local farming happening to step up and support those local farmers.
Yes. Kind of like public radio, isn't
it?
If you're
very much like
you should.
I know. You should be a supporter. I know. And so I want you to let people know how to find out more information about you. So website, contact information.
Website, www.blackberrybogfarm.com. We also have a Facebook page.
Uh-huh.
So we can be found both of those ways.
Find you many different ways, and then look for you at Two Old Goats in Napa and various farmers markets, Svensson Grange, the Wickiup Grange.
Yes.
So many cool things that you're doing. I mean, it's exciting to see how much is going on. at your place. I feel like it's wonderful to see that property being transformed.
It's been. Sometimes we forget to look back and see how many changes have taken place in the last 3 years.
I try and make myself periodically just go out, and I've actually made some photo points on our farm where I go and stand in the same place, mm-hmm. and just kind of do a 360 degree,
yes.
like take photos from the same place different times of year, so that I can go back and look and go, oh my goodness.
One of our projects this winter is a photo album that we'll be taking to markets, which have before and after photos from several different spots where
That's
we do the
so
same thing.
That's so cool. Yeah. I know. In 10 years from now, it's going to be mind-blowing.
When the apple trees are 15
when
feet
your
tall.
Apple trees
yes.
are 15 feet tall. Yeah.
And it will be about 10 years from now. Yeah.
I know. But that's, it's nice to have long-term things to look
yes.
forward to,
yeah.
and then also more immediate crops as well.
Yes.
And, I'm sure that things will evolve over time.
Oh, but, absolutely. Things will come. Things will go. Yeah.
Absolutely. But
yeah.
it's cool to have the opportunity to try
and
to be finding a willing market in this
yes.
area.
Yes, yes.
I know. So hopefully the snow will at some point melt. And we will be
things
able to get out and things
bit.
Will dry
yes,
off
yes.
and we'll have a...
It's happened every other year, so
it
eventually
has.
It will.
I know. Fingers crossed for a slightly less wet spring
yeah.
this year.
Yeah,
I
yes.
know. I wish you a fabulous growing season,
thank
Scott.
You.
And thank you for coming and sharing your knowledge
it's
with us.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
I know.
That.
Oh, I'm very grateful. I know. And I just want to remind our listening audience here on Coast Community Radio that coming up in the next hour is Tuesday Folk. And the excitement today is that Joanne Rideout and someone else whose name
Richard Dawson
are going to be sitting in for Carol today. So you're going to hear a whole different style of folk. But stay tuned and support Joanne and Richard because they're excited about it.
Because we're here.
Because they're here. And I know that Carol's so grateful for you guys just stepping up to the plate and taking that on. So thank you. And thanks to everyone who's listening and supporting Coast Community Radio. We're really grateful for you. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.